With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This story starts with a military dictatorship in Brazil and ends with an Englishman drunk at his bachelor party dressed as the Brazilian football legend Socrates in Valencia. This episode of our podcast is about the time the Brazilian football legend Socrates made a surprising appearance at Garforth Town, a non-league team in England. It would be one of Socrates' last big adventures before he tragically passed away. It's a bittersweet story about a Brazilian military dictatorship, a pink dressing room, a revolution, beer, cigarettes, and a struggle to find purpose in life. My name is Sam van Raalte, and welcome to The Home of Football, the podcast by 433. Let's go. Back in 2004, Garforth Town, a tiny club near Leeds, was owned by a man named Simon Clifford. Simon loves Brazilian football. He successfully set up Brazilian football schools all over the world, and then he bought the football club Garforth Town. Simon even let Garforth Town play in the Brazilian colors, yellow and blue. Simon also became the manager of the club, and he was an unusual manager. He did everything in his power to get a psychological advantage over the opponents. For example, he painted the dressing room for the visitors at Garforth Town bright pink. I spoke with Greg Kelly, the club top scorer of Garforth Town at the time, about Simon Clifford's revolutionary psychological tactics. Here's Greg Kelly.
Simon had all sort of tricks up his sleeve, to be honest. The pink changing room was probably the most brightest, horrible pink you could ever think of. And Simon decided to change everything that was white to bright pink. So from your showers to your actual changing room to your toilets, the roof, it was literally a full pink, bright pink room. It was like there were a constant pink light on in the room. There were actually no lights on. He didn't actually need any lights because it was that bright. And people were coming out squinting. And I think if you could sit in there with sunglasses on, you probably would have done. And it worked, to be honest. Players used to come out and obviously used to speak to the opposition when you're on the pitch and just asking, what the hell is that all about? But it sort of, it did put them off the game. It took them 5-10 minutes. Sometimes football games can be over in them first 10 minutes. You grab a couple of goals and the opposition are sort of always chasing, so it opens up the game a little bit more. But yeah, Simon's done all sorts, got young lads kicking balls onto the pitch from behind the fence and things like that. But so Simon had all sorts of tricks up his sleeve. And to be honest, the managers and the teams wanted to defeat Simon more than they wanted to defeat us as a team. And I think that worked in our favour. With it being concentrating on Simon more than concentrating on what we were actually doing on the football pitch. So it actually took the pressure off us as a team, and Simon sort of took it all on the chin, and I think he quite enjoyed it, to be honest.
So Simon Clifford painted the away dressing room pink and had boys kicking balls onto the pitch to break the momentum of the opponent. The team of Garforth Town loved the song Way to Amarillo, and sometimes Simon Clifford would let that song blast through the speakers in the middle of the game to give his guys a boost. One time, when Garforth Town had to play a crucial away game at the end of the season, Clifford stopped the bus at a service station and let them do their warm-up there. They then waited until 5 minutes before kickoff to arrive at the ground. They then went straight off the bus onto the pitch, confusing their opponents about what the hell was going on. And it worked. Garforth Town won that game 1-0. Crazy things were happening at this tiny English club at the time, but nothing was as wild as the day the Brazilian legend Socrates made an appearance for Garforth Town. Here's how it happened. Simon Clifford, the owner and manager of the club back then, was passionate about Brazilian football. He became a fan of the Brazilian national team in the early 80s, and he became friends with the Brazilian player Juninho when he came to England to play for Middlesbrough in the early 2000s. That led Simon to set up Brazilian football schools all over the world. Here's the man Simon Clifford himself on his passion for Brazilian football.
I went out to Brazil. Through the help of Juninho, I got to meet Zico, Rivelino, Careca, some of the heroes that I'd had. I spent time in some of the big football clubs, some of the poor areas. As a teacher, I spent the whole summer holidays there researching, and the BBC came with me, made a little documentary. And after the BBC documentary, my soccer school spread across the country, across the United Kingdom, and then eventually across the world. They ended up on every continent. I bought a football club in Leeds, Garforth Town Football Club. I bought that in 2003, I think. On getting the club, I wanted to create some sort of connection between the club and the soccer schools. But I thought we could really do with a Brazilian player here to sort of stress all of the good that I see that's in Brazil in terms of their football and football development. So then my friend Alex Bellos knew Socrates. Alex wrote a fabulous book called Futebol, The Brazilian Way of Life. And Alex spoke to Socrates about it, and Alex reported back to me, said, Socrates is up for doing this.
So Alex Bellos, a friend of Simon, knew Socrates and asked him if he was interested in coming to England to play for Garforth Town and become an ambassador for Simon's Brazilian football schools. And amazingly, Socrates was up for it, even though he was 50 years old then. Now, to fully understand how crazy this was, you have to understand how amazing Socrates was as a football player. Socrates became an absolute football legend in the late 70s and early 80s. Few players in the history of football have had such an impact on the game. And he still has today. For example, Pep Guardiola was a big fan of Socrates' Brazil. Now, to fully understand his impact on the game and this country, I spoke with Andrew Downey, the man who worked on Socrates' biography with Socrates himself. Here's Andrew.
He was an activist as well as being a football player. His biography was this. He grew up in an upper middle class family in Ribeirão Preto, which is about 4 hours from Sao Paulo. He studied to be a doctor. And so at the same time as he was playing for the local club, Botafogo de Ribeirão Preto, he was studying to be a doctor. You know, his father was very well read. And because he had this upper class, upper middle class upbringing, they were forced to study, and they were quite educated. Him and all his brothers, had five brothers, they were all very educated. So, you know, he was aware of politics and social issues and all these kind of things as a footballer.
So Socrates was an educated man in the world of football, and Brazil at the time was under military dictatorship. The military coup had taken place in 1964 and stifled freedom of speech and political opposition in the country. When Socrates came up as a footballer in the late 70s, the army still ruled Brazil. Socrates didn't agree with that. When he became a star at Corinthians, one of the biggest and most successful football clubs in Brazil, he was outspoken about the political situation of the country and spoke about the benefits of democracy. There was a whole new generation in Brazil that didn't know what voting, freedom of speech, or human rights were. Here's Andrew Downey on Socrates' political impact.
So Socrates was this big personality. He was well known in Brazil for his football. And what he did at Corinthians was, Brazil in the early 1980s was at the end of a long dictatorship. The right-wing military took over in 1964. And so there was no democracy in Brazil, you know, for 20 years. And what Socrates did is he formed this group at Corinthians, and it was called Corinthians Democracy. It was a group of players, all the players at the club, plus the backroom staff, you know, the coaches, plus the kit man, plus the you know, the people who made the, you know, the cooks and the janitors and all these kind of things. They all got a vote on issues around the club, and all the players voted on football issues. So they would vote on whether to, you know, if they had the game on Sunday in Rio, they would vote whether to go on the Sunday morning or go on the Saturday night. They would vote on whether to buy a new left back or who the new left back should be. So there was this real kind of democracy in action at the football club, which was an absolutely astonishing thing, because Brazilian football was always run by powerful characters, you know, who tended to be white and tended to be rich, and who had no time for, you know, to listen to footballers who tended to be black and tended to be poor. And Sócrates would talk about these issues, you know, before games and after games. And so it brought these messages to people who had never really heard them before. And it was a real, you know, had a huge impact. Nobody listened to the Brazilian president before he went to a summit in Washington. But everybody listened to Sócrates before he went to play for Brazil in the World Cup. So it was a huge, it was a revolutionary player power movement. It's been, you know, 40 years now, but no major team has had the same kind of player power movement where the players voted on issues and decided on issues that were relevant to them. So, you know, as Lula, the ex-president of Brazil, said, you know, it's so revolutionary that we're still talking about it today.
Sócrates, along with several others, revolutionized the club and the country as a football player. Now, before we get back to that crazy little club, Garforth Town, we have to shine light on the type of player Sócrates was. Sócrates was a skinny footballer who played as an attacking midfielder. He was known for his beard and curly hair. He always wore a headband. In the 80s, Sócrates was the captain of one of the best national teams to never win a World Cup, with legendary players like Zico and Leandro. Sócrates was often called the brain of the team. He was truly unique. Here's Andrew Downey on Sócrates' signature move.
You know, he had this style all of his own. People really remember him in Brazil for his back heel, because he said that because he was so tall and so thin, that when he was a kid, he used to really worry about getting hit by defenders, because the defenders were big, burly guys, and he was this, you know, stick thin, you know, kid. And he said, I learned to get rid of the ball as soon as I could. So as soon as the ball came to me and I saw these defenders coming to me, I would lay it off as quickly as possible, and that meant laying it off with whatever part of the foot, you know, was quickest. And that was really his trademark move, was the back heel, and it was this other thing that gave him this whole kind of aura, this kind of magic about him, because he did things differently.
Let's fast forward to 2004. The eccentric manager Simon Clifford is doing everything in his power to build up Garforth Town. He wants that tiny club to become the second professional football team in the area, after Leeds United. He manages to get former Manchester United midfielder Lee Sharp to play for Garforth Town for a few months. And then he reaches out to his Brazilian contacts. Sócrates, who is 50 years old at the time, lets him know he's interested. He will be coming to Garforth Town. Simon is very excited. He goes to the airport and picks Sócrates up.
I was delighted because he was one of my very favourite players. I was curious to know the physical condition he was in, because there wasn't any recent pictures. We geared up for it. It was very exciting for all the kids that we had in our organisation of the soccer schools. And then the whole country got excited, and I went and picked him up at the airport, and I was absolutely delighted to see him, and came with his wife. We got him in the car and took him to Leeds. And yeah, I mean, if I reflect back on that period, we say that Brazilian football is a happy football, and Brazilian football is equated with joy. But that whole visit of his was just joyous. Every interaction he had with people, all of it, he loved it. I think he felt happy here. I think it was a really good time for him too. Meeting people, we travelled all across the country. We went to Scotland. We were everywhere. He had a very busy schedule. He and I had a wonderful time during his stay with us. Apart from the Garforth stuff, we really got on as people. We had similar political views. We had very similar views on football and life. Yeah, it was one of the happiest times of my life, that time with him. I was the only person in our group who could speak Portuguese, so I had to spend sort of all of the time with him, you know, on the evening. Him and I would go for meals, but I spent all of the social time with him as well. And I was very privileged to have that time.
Simon is not the only one who was delighted back then. The announcement that the Brazilian legend Socrates has come to England to play for Little Garforth Town becomes nationwide news in England. The BBC announces it on national television.
The legend of Brazilian football will be making his debut today for the little-known Garforth Town Football Club near Leeds. Socrates, who's now 50, captained the 1982 Brazilian World Cup side.
Well, our reporter Danny Carpenter is at Socrates' new home ground. Well, it doesn't quite look like a World Cup beating ground, does it there?
No, indeed, no. From the samba sunshine of Sao Paulo to sub-zero Yorkshire.
Greg Kelly was 24 years old and the top scorer of Garforth Town at the time. Here's Greg on the impact of the announcement and the arrival of Socrates.
Socrates sort of got sort of dropped on us near enough the week before, a couple of weeks before, and it just snowballed from there. The day that Simon mentioned it, it sort of went from a quiet village to a sort of a bustling village, to this signs up everywhere. There were sort of news reports starting to filter through, and then TV, and Simon had sort of obviously wanted to put Garforth on the map, and he definitely did with this Socrates signing. It sort of went from zero to 100 in a matter of a couple of days, and before we knew it, it were the Saturday morning of the game, and the ground was absolutely packed. I expected Socrates to come because of Simon's great Brazilian connections, but I still didn't quite think he was actually going to play. Obviously, you Google a picture of Socrates, he was sort of a really tall man, but sort of really thin at the same time. So I thought, well, he's not going to turn up like that, surely, with his snazzy little headband on. But he turned up, and when he walked into the changing room, I think everyone were like, nah, he can't be playing, surely. We knew that he probably wasn't going to start, but the amount of people that had turned up, there were T-shirts, there were banners, there were scarves. He had to play some part in the game. Now, if it were a minute, 12 minutes, I think even if we were winning or losing, drawing, I think Socrates would have always come on.
Now, there's something you should know about Socrates. He was a heavy smoker and drinker his entire career. So when he came to Garforth Town at the age of 50, he was not in tip-top condition. Here's Andrew Downey on Socrates' smoking and drinking habits.
I mean, he lived in Ribeirão Preto, which is in about 4 hours from Sao Paulo, and it's really, really hot in Ribeirão Preto. It's, you know, the temperature is frequently over 100 degrees, and people drink beer. You know, the beer is quite weak. People would drink beer to hydrate, or at least that was his excuse. So he, you know, he drank from an early age. You know, he smoked, which again gave him this real kind of, you know, cool aura. He used to say, you know, one of his most famous quotes was, "I smoke, I drink, and I think." And that was kind of a challenge to people who would say, you know, you should be more professional. You should, you know, take more care of your body. And he said, look, this is the way I am. This is who I am. And, you know, I'm not going to change it for anybody. And he was very stubborn in that kind of way. He enjoyed that image that he had of being different, of being cool, of being contrary is really the word that I would use if I had to use one word to describe Socrates. He was quite contrary. You know, he would be in a discussion. If someone said, you know, the sky is blue, he'd go, no, the sky is black. You know, he would take the opposite point in order to get into a debate and to get into a discussion. And that's what he really loved to do, is he would get into these discussions, often, you know, completely pointless discussions, but he would, you know, because these would invariably happen over beers and drinks. So he loved to draw the debates out and the discussions out, where he could have a laugh and a joke, and they would always end in a laugh and a joke.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even though Socrates was 50 years old when he arrived at Garforth Town, the impact was huge. It was a cold November evening, and the opponent was Tadcaster Albion. Greg Kelly couldn't believe his eyes when he arrived at the ground of Garforth Town that evening.
It was such a surreal time, really. Normally, when we turn up for a game, the only people that are there are sort of the odd stadium staff that either you get there, the opponents might be there before you, there's an odd few cars around of your teammates, things like that. But when you turned into the ground this time, the whole street were lined from side to side with TV cameras, photographers, news crews, a lot more supporters than what there was, queuing to get in, people selling merchandise, everything you could think of at a sort of high professional game at the minute. This disappeared on the doorstep of Garforth Town. Everybody wanted to try speak to you, pictures, things like that. It was just such a surreal time. And sort of when we get there sort of an hour before, it was still busy when we sort of came out to start warming up and noticed the sheer amount of people that were stood around the ground. Normally, I think Garforth on a good day would potentially get maybe 200 people, but it must have been three or four deep, stood around the railings, around the pitch. The little stand was full, and my people were still trying to get in. I think the attendance was somewhere around 1,400, which for that little crowd, for that little ground, was unbelievable, and the atmosphere was great. And it was literally just before we came in, sort of before the actual kickoff, maybe 15, 20 minutes before we came in a little bit earlier. That's when Simon actually brought Socrates in. He sort of went round the room, wished us all good luck, give us a bit of a pep talk, and that was about it, really. It was sort of a bit of a strange scenario to be in, sort of getting changed, and a World Cup legend was sort of giving you a bit of a pep talk before you played another team in your league. It's a surreal game. it just didn't seem like Little Garforth Town should be happening in Little Garforth Town.
Greg is right. It seemed like this shouldn't be happening in Little Garforth Town. So we have to understand why Socrates did this, what his life was like after he stopped playing football. You see, in the late 90s, Socrates became a manager at several clubs. At his last club, Cabo Friense, he tried to implement a democratic system, much like he did at Corinthians as a player. He wanted to educate the players about politics and democracy so they would take more responsibility, because football players were often treated like kids, he thought. But the club was not interested in his philosophy. According to Socrates himself, 41 people voted on whether they should implement the system Socrates proposed. But Socrates was the only one who voted in favor. The other 40 all voted against his plans. Socrates left the club. Andrew Downey believes that this caused Socrates to go adrift in life.
Knowingly or not, it was a real kind of blow to him that, you know, this greatest period in his life, the most important period in his life, that had this massive impact, you know, he kind of saw that it didn't have the impact, it didn't have a lasting impact. He wanted other people to think the same way, to act responsibly and to take an interest in politics, and they weren't interested. And I think he was very disappointed in that. And I also think that, you know, when he tried that, it was sent out a signal to other Brazilian football clubs that Socrates hadn't really changed. So, I mean, one of his dreams was he wanted to look after, you know, youth teams and kids at Corinthians, which was his big, you know, Corinthians were his big love. You know, that was the team he really loved, along with Botafogo, his hometown team. He would really have loved to go to Botafogo and to Corinthians and to have taught the kids not just football, but about these, you know, politics and social responsibility. And I think clubs realized this was what he was going to do, and they didn't want the hassle. They didn't want this. They didn't want somebody like Socrates coming in and upending, you know, their cozy little system where, you know, they were in charge. You know, people who run football did not want, you know, football players telling them how to run their clubs. And I think that was maybe a factor, you know, in the last years as well. And all these things happened, and he just never really found the one thing in life that he really wanted to do.
So Socrates became sort of an exile in the world of football. He had a column in a newspaper for a while, appeared on several TV shows and painted, but it wasn't a full-time job, a calling like he had before. That's why when Simon Clifford asked him to come to England to be an ambassador for his football schools and play for Garforth Town, he said, sure, why not? And for little Garforth Town, this was the ultimate publicity stunt.
There's no bigger buzz than having, you know, a former Brazil captain, like a legend like Socrates, turning up on this freezing cold November day. I mean, the thing that Socrates remembers about it is that it was just so damn cold. He was freezing, sitting on the bench in his long trousers and his gloves and his hat. He was, you know, I think he was happy to get off the bench just to run around a bit and warm up. It's peculiar, the whole Garforth Town incident, because, you know, I don't think any 12-minute appearance, substitute appearance, non-professional substitute appearance, or semi-professional substitute appearance has had such an impact as Socrates' 12 minutes for Garforth Town. And it's weird because in the UK and in Europe, you know, people often talk about it, people remember it. Socrates was a man who loved new experiences. He loved to do things that were different. And he had, you know, he got this offer to come to England. It was involved with teaching at soccer schools, and for Socrates it wasn't so much appearing for Garforth Town that I think appealed to him. It was coming to England for 3 weeks, you know, seeing new people, you know, going around the country, making new friends, and I'll play football for a game or half a game. I don't think he realized. I don't think he came planning to play much football. So it was really this real unusual experience for him that has really, I think, in many senses, been completely blown out of proportion, because it was just a weekend away, a laugh for him.
So there Socrates was on this cold November evening, sitting on the bench at Garforth Town. Socrates was wearing a hat, scarf and a blanket. And being a chain smoker, he also lit up a cigarette. Greg Kelly clearly remembers the sight of the Brazilian legend in the dugout.
He was sort of sat on the dugout with his three coats on, his two sets of gloves, his two pair of his hats on, his tracksuit bottoms on. And it was a cold, cold day in November. I'm sure he was sort of sat there having a smoke in the dugout, which you don't normally see, obviously, from a footballer at a semi-professional level, sat in a dugout smoking. But I know players that smoke myself and things like that. So it didn't sort of shock me. And everyone sort of knew, and obviously back in when Socrates was his prime, there was a heavy drinking and smoking culture anyway. So that was sort of the norm for everybody back then. That's what they did. They went out, they drank, they smoked, and then they turned up and played football.
And Socrates was not just smoking himself. He even got the man who brought him to England to start smoking. Here's Simon Clifford.
The first few evenings with him were a little bit stiff, and he was trying to encourage me to have a drink. At the time, I wasn't drinking in that period of my life because I was trying to focus on the work. And so I didn't want to drink. So I'd say, no, it's okay, you know. And then, but at the end of the meal, he'd then offer me a cigarette. And I'd say, no, I don't smoke. It's all right. But maybe a couple of nights of being with him, he'd ask me to drink again. And I'd say, no, I've got work and I need to focus on that. You could smoke in restaurants then. So after the meal, he'd say, come on, have a cigarette. I'd say, no, I'm okay. And he'd say, hey, you're either my brother or you're not my brother. This sort of thing, putting me under pressure. And eventually I thought, do you know what? I'll just have a cigarette, which I had one, which led to another. And so all of our meals then, on evenings, I'd smoke. Next thing is, we're traveling up to Scotland in the car, and he passes me one. I'm smoking with him. And he said, you've now got a habit, which wasn't good. And I did. Which I didn't realize. I thought, well, I'll give up tomorrow, which I didn't. I ended up smoking for about 9 years, which is awful.
All right, back to the day Socrates made his debut for Garforth Town. When the game starts, Garforth Town does well. They score twice before halftime, and Socrates gives the team another pep talk at halftime. But in the second half, Tadcaster Albion scores twice. Greg Kelly clearly remembers how the game became frantic after the equalizer.
And then it just sort of became a bit of a dogfight then. And I think sort of coming to the 70th minute, which is what I get the most stick for, Garforth Town were given a penalty. I think it was 70th, 75th minute, something like that. Maybe a little bit later, we got a penalty. And I know for a fact that Simon were wanting to bring Socrates on to take it. But he wasn't quite ready. And me being the penalty taker, said, well, I'll have it. Socrates is not ready. I'll just take it. I'd never missed one before. And unfortunately, the keeper made a really good save. and I missed it. So it's one of them wrong place, wrong time, cameras, 1,400 people stood around the stadium, and then I decided to miss my penalty where I've scored plenty of them before.
Greg missed the penalty in front of the biggest crowd he ever played for. And then, in the 78th minute, it was time for the 50-year-old Socrates to make his debut for Garforth Town. However, like Greg said, the game became an old-school kick-and-rush type of game, a far cry from the samba football Socrates used to play in his prime.
Socrates didn't get many touches, but when he did, sort of a nice little pass here, there and everywhere, but it wasn't, I think he did more running than actual touching of the ball. Say running in and around the centre circle, but it's sort of the ball and the game were sort of missing out the midfield, so he obviously didn't benefit from that. And when we were pushing for the win, so every time our keeper got it, it was sort of a long ball to the attackers, and then vice versa for them. They were trying to pinch it because we were full on attacking, so they were trying to counter attack, so it sort of missed out the midfield. And once he did get a touch, there were nice little touches here, there and everywhere, and I think he managed to have one shot. I don't think the goalkeeper's hands would have been stinging. It was on target, the keeper saved it, but you never know, one day that might have gone in, took a deflection, it may have gone in, but yeah, it definitely wasn't thunderous, put it that way. he were blowing a bit after the 90 minutes, put it that way.
Even though Socrates struggled to make an impact and the game ended in a draw, the crowd erupted after the final whistle.
Yeah, there was sort of a mini pitch invasion, to be honest, because everybody wanted to sort of try and get on and have a pitch. It was sort of before the crazy mobile phone times that we're in now, but people still had mobile phones and things like that, and were wanting an odd picture or an autograph or anything like that. It sort of just got mob-handed. There was sort of TV cameras on the pitch trying to get interviews with people, and a few of the lads had interviews with national TV channels over here. But yeah, he was sort of a bit crazy, really, and sort of rushing him off the pitch. He was obviously absolutely shattered. He was thrown into a bit of a dogfight. So yeah, I think it took him, hit him for six after the game, and it took him a while to catch his breath, put it that way. Garforth had got some football boots for Socrates. So after the game, they were sort of still under his stool on the in the box. So I said, oh, excuse me, do you mind if you sign these boots for me? And he's like, no, not a problem. So I got him to sign the boots, and I put them in the back of my car, and that was the last the club ever saw of them. So they're currently in my loft, so I've got a nice bit of memorabilia from the day. Yeah, still in my boots 17 years later, pristine condition in the box.
After the game, Socrates signed memorabilia, took pictures. He stayed around in the changing room, had a laugh with the guys. There was even a press conference with the media asking questions why and how he appeared at Garforth Town. Here's Simon Clifford on the aftermath of the game.
After the game, he was very cold. We missed a penalty, which if he'd have got on earlier in the match, he would have ended up taking that penalty. But the boots that we had for him didn't fit him, so he ended up wearing our physiotherapist's boots, which delayed him coming on the pitch, and he'd have been on a little bit longer. So afterwards, we had to get him warm, and then he wanted a drink. He got a little Budweiser or something, and we went into the bar, met some of the supporters, then upstairs spoke to the media, and then we went into Leeds City Centre, where some of the Leeds United players, I think there was some well-known players there that sort of bumped into us, and everybody seemed to be turning up to meet him. It was a fantastic evening that capped off a magical day.
Socrates then returned to Brazil without playing another game for Garforth Town. Greg Kelly is still often reminded of that game. People still ask him, are you the guy that missed the penalty in that Socrates game? And his best friends still joke about it, like best friends should.
I got married a couple of years ago, and my two best men actually dressed me up as Socrates. I had sort of the full Brazilian kit on with a huge black wig. I think I look more like René Higuita, the Colombian goalkeeper, than I did Socrates, due to the size of the wig that they made me wear. But yeah, it was it got a few looks and a few laughs, and I had the Socrates number. I think it was either 8 or 6 on the back of the shirt, and I had the white headband on and everything like that. But the wig didn't last very long because we went to Valencia and it was very warm. Them years at Garforth Town were probably my favourite time in football. I've made friends for life, and I'm still friends with many of them now, and we still sort of meet up. But it were a special time, and yeah, I'm very grateful to be part of it.
After Socrates, Simon Clifford also got Careca, another well-known Brazilian player, to play for Garforth Town for a while. He was even close to signing Romario and Cafu as well, but unfortunately that didn't happen. Simon Clifford tried to stay into contact with Socrates after he left Garforth Town, but that was difficult. Unfortunately, things didn't go well for Socrates after he left Garforth Town. He died in 2011, at the age of 57, in Brazil. Here's Andrew Downey on the death of Socrates and the way his time at Garforth Town was indicative of what was coming.
Socrates died in December 2011, prematurely. He died essentially from complications from alcohol abuse. You know, he drank, you know, if not every day, then almost every day. And over the years, it took its toll. And I think the Garforth Town incident was indicative of a period in Socrates' life when he was looking for something to get his teeth into. He was looking for something to do. All Socrates' life, he imagined that he would play football and then be a doctor, you know, because all his life he wanted to be a doctor. He never really knew why, but he had always wanted to be a doctor. So once he got his degree, he became a professional. And then when he finished, you know, the first thing he did, he went straight back into studying medicine again to bring himself up to speed. And he started his own clinic, an orthopedic clinic, and it never worked out for various reasons. It never worked out. And so when that didn't work out, he was kind of left not really knowing what to do with his life. And the last years of his life, you know, he would go from one thing to another without really finding, you know, some project that really made him happy. And as his brother said to me, you know, when you don't have something, you know, some kind of anchor like that in your life, then, you know, bohemianism took over, and that's what happened with Socrates. You know, he was always, you know, he always had his drinking and his smoking and his friends, and that was always a hugely important thing to him. But, you know, the last few years of his life, he never had a lot of other things, you know, apart from that. So that kind of took over, and I think that maybe hastened his demise a little bit at the end. Yeah.
Simon Clifford was also shocked by the death of Socrates. He cherishes the memories he has from Socrates' time at Garforth Town. Here's Simon.
Incredibly sad, because he was so young and, you know, so young, and he just had so much more to give. And he would say a lot that the 82 team, you know, they did what they did. He was happy that they entertained, that the art is as important as the result. But I do think there was a slight sadness about him, which may be a result of that. I'm not sure. I think he felt unfulfilled, and maybe that's why he changed different projects and was coming up with different ideas. I'm not sure. So I felt tremendously sad. Yeah, incredibly sad. He would send me music. He'd give me music CDs that he'd recorded. He'd recorded these albums. He was writing a play, or he'd done a play. He was doing a PhD on the fact that football today, to get the same art and beauty and time that we had in his era, would have to now be 7-a-side. He'd obviously done his medical degree. He was an absolute, total and utter polymath and Renaissance man. And, very, very, very sad. And I'm very glad that I met him. And I hoped he'd found some sort of peace in some way. He was an extraordinary man and a different man. To sit with him, you know, on 3-4 hours in an evening over dinner, and then afterwards, it was a a complete education, not just in football, but in life. And I think he felt underappreciated in Brazil. And I hoped in our little way, in what we'd done here, we'd showed him how we appreciated him and loved him.
So bohemianism took over in the life of Socrates. The Brazilian legend who revolutionized his club and country was looking for a purpose in life after his career as a player ended. He didn't find it, but at least he enjoyed the ride. And even though his life was shorter than it could have been, he had more impact than most players ever will, both on and off the pitch. This was the story of the Brazilian legend Socrates at Garforth Town. I want to thank Simon Clifford, Greg Kelly and Andrew Downey for their time. Subscribe to this podcast to never miss an episode. My name is Sam van Raalte. Thank you for listening and on to the next story in the home of football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.